want to talk about moral courage this morning. And then tonight at 4 o'clock when we gather together, the second lesson that kind of goes with this but wasn't designed to go with this, but it works together pretty well. Well, I want to speak on when I must stand alone. And that's taken from Matthew 10, 16 to 37. So my plans are, as we talk on moral courage and learn more of this lesson, to help us when we look at tonight's subject matter. When you see a picture like this, and I'm, you know, was looking for pictures that I wanted to show, and you know, a man on top of the world, there sometimes, most of the times, you've got, you know, this, or up on a mountain, like, wow, I've conquered. And that's not exactly what I wanted to do. I mean, you can see a man confidently walking there, and, you know, and I'm on top of the world, nobody's going to stop me. But yet, on the other hand, some may feel, and you might not even know it, that they feel like they're all alone. You ever felt that way? You're all alone with so many people that need to change. Do I have it in me to stand up and do what I can do? It's so easy to get beat down. And when we look at Joshua and think about him, I wonder what he would have felt like. I wonder if he would have been more on that second line level. And I'm pretty sure it's like, wow, I'm replacing Moses. You know, Numbers 27, 15 to 17 said, then Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, may the Lord, the God of his spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out, come in before them, who will lead them out, bring them in, so that the congregation of the Lord will not be like sheep which have no shepherd. And it had been set up that he was going to be taking Moses' place. But when you look at Deuteronomy, and we're going to read Joshua 1 here in a minute, but verse 10 of Deuteronomy 34, in that chapter that we have the death of Moses, says, since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. Joshua has been with Moses, as far as I can tell, his whole life. And he has seen the things that Moses has accomplished through God. He's seen the mistake that Moses has made. And now he is going to be taken his place. So let's read Joshua 1, 1 to 9, a passage that Bible students are very familiar with. Verse 1 beginning, it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan and all the people to the land which I'm giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you. Just as I spoke to Moses from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun, will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. I wish that we had that song, Be Strong and Courageous, in our songbooks. It's a beautiful song and expresses what we're reading here. But here, you know, would there be fear in Joshua? I would. He's been 40 years. He's had a funeral every day for 40 years of people that complained and didn't follow God. He's got a new people that are ready to go in. He's taking over. I get intimidated when I follow a gospel preacher holding a meeting. Mike Davis, Lord willing, is going to come in here, and then the next Sunday I'm going to have to get up and follow him. I can't imagine Joshua following Moses. Not only is there going to be that fear, so to speak, of the enemy that they're going to be going up against, but the people that he's leading. And as I've said, he's replacing Moses. And generally what happens when a great leader dies in the eyes of a people? They become even more renowned. Okay? When people speak of Ronald Reagan today, the respect that's given him isn't even close to what it was when he was running the country. And that's just the way things are. And so, as great as Moses was, and he was, and he still made a mistake and paid the consequence, but now he's dead. Well, there's that fear that would most naturally be there. But our great God says, he keeps telling them, I'm going to be with you everywhere that your foot goes. That's yours. It's been promised. Just like I was with Moses, and I was with him face to face. Just like I was with him, I will be with you. Be strong and courageous. Be strong and very courageous. I am commanding you to be strong and courageous. And how is this going to happen? Well, then you've got to make sure you know all of the law. You meditate on all of the law. You follow all of the law. You use wisdom with that law. Great lesson for us. I think Timothy had some doubts and fears himself, being a young preacher, filling in or following Paul, so to speak. And Paul writes to him, as he calls him his son, so many times in 2 Timothy 1:7, he tells Timothy, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. He's reassuring him. Now, the kind of fear, as I a lot of times say, that causes us not to act, to be disabled, to be paralyzed, so to speak, is not, you know, to do that which is right. You know, we get so maybe fearful that we're not going to do the things that we should do. Stand up for what's right. That fear, that doesn't come from God. Does not come from God. That's Satan doing everything he can. I'm going to look at moral courage. Bear with me with this. The U.S. Medal of Honor. The award recognizes members of the U.S. Armed Forces who distinguish themselves clearly by courageousness, risking their life above and beyond the call of duty while engaged in an action against an enemy of the United States. I love watching history, watching some history documentaries of the wars of World War I, World War II in particular, and seeing some of these stories that come out. They're amazing. Aristotle believed that the epitome of courage is facing noble death at the hands of the enemy during your offensive attack in a just war for the people. Willing to give up your life for what's for your country, so to speak. Ernest Hemingway said, courage is grace under pressure. Dwight Eisenhower said, uncomplaining acceptance of unendurable conditions. And Bobby Kennedy. Listen, I'm going to give a couple of quotes of what he said about moral courage. And at the time, he's speaking in South Africa in 1966, which was such a huge heyday of legal racial separation. Few are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet it is the one essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change. And he follows it up by saying it means standing up and standing out in defense of a principle, even when others are standing aside. You know, most people have more physical courage than they realize. Just about every time you hear about the soldiers or about a policeman or about some citizen walk along who sees something, they just take off and they have more courage physically to do something than they ever thought they did. But the man who wouldn't hesitate to risk bodily harm in a situation like that, how many times is that one unwilling to risk ridicule to save someone's soul? Or even his own? I believe moral courage is rare and more important than physical courage. Though I believe they both are very important. And, I don't know when or if. I think it's more of a when. That time's coming in this country where we're going to need both. But I do know right now we need moral courage. Let me, one other quote that I like before I get to this is, courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the judgment that something else is more important. Because when you are doing either the physical courage or that moral courage, either way, there's going to be some fear there. But what you're after is more important. And what we learn is that God says, if you're following my word, not just follow my word, you're following all my word. If you are not going to the right or to the left, if you are not just studying it, but meditating on it. What does it mean to meditate? I've spoken on some lessons on that, but man, there's just times we just don't meditate enough. And that's very important. Well, God said it was important for Joshua. But doing right sometimes requires physical courage. True commitment to the Lord is not without physical dangers. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11. We'll be back to Joshua 1 towards the end of the lesson. And Hebrews 11, let's pick up with verse 32. And this chapter here is that great chapter of faith that the writer of Hebrews is trying to encourage the people that are wanting to give up this stand for Christ and go back to the old way. And he's using them people to teach them about faith. So verse 32, he's been listing people. And what more shall I say? For the time fail if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, Samuel, the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to fight. Women received back their dead by resurrections, and others were tortured, not accepting their release, so that they might obtain a better resurrection. You know, that passage there fits in the last article in the bulletin that Dan doesn't know I co-wrote with him. Verse 36, and others experienced mockings and encouragement, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. Wow. How many of you went through that last week? True commitment to the Lord is not without its physical dangers. When we look at Revelation 12:11, and they have conquered him by the testimony of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, for they love not their lives even unto death. We know of the things that those Christians went through towards the end of that first century with Rome, where loved ones would be set before them and where they would, you know, you renounce God or I'm going to torture your family in front of you and torture them. And their love for God was more important than their love for themselves. Their love for God was more important than their love for their family. Understanding that they would have a reward. That, my friends, is faith, because what you see and feel is nothing but pain and torture and agony and misery. And you've got to look past that. You've got to have the moral courage, you've got to have the courage, even physically. Every trial, every opportunity is given there to demonstrate faith in God. That's why Paul wrote in the opening section of 2 Corinthians 1 about that comfort that you can get from the comfort of others who've gone through things. Paul's attitude gives us a great example. Let's drop back to Acts 20. You know, in our class, we talked about Ephesus and the trials that were going on there. Well, now Paul's swinging by, bringing home monies that he's collected to help the brethren in Jerusalem, and he's stopping by to talk to the elders at Ephesus. In verse 22, he says, and now behold, bound by the Spirit, I'm on my way to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there, except that the Holy Spirit solemnly testifies to me in every city, saying that bonds and afflictions await me. But I do not consider my life of any account as dear to myself, so that I may finish my course in the ministry which I received from the Lord Jesus to testify solemnly of the gospel of the grace of God. He's not going into this blind as he began blind. You know what I'm saying? On the road to Damascus, he was blinded, and then he received his sight, he was baptized, but he was told what he was going to be getting into. But I find this interesting. He knows there's something bad going to happen, but he doesn't know exactly what it is. But he's going to press on. He's got a course to finish. And it's interesting in 2 Timothy 4, when he says, I'm being poured out as a drink offering, Timothy, send me Mark, and you come and bring me my stuff, because I've finished the race. We see in chapter 21, beginning at verse 8, he's made his way to Caesarea. So on the next day we left, came to Caesarea. So he's coming back. So now he's not too far from Jerusalem, entering into the house of Philip the evangelist, who was one of the seven. We stayed with him. Now this man, let me see where I'm going to read here. This man had four virgins who were prophetess, and as we were staying there for some days, a prophet named Agabus came down from Judea. And coming to us, he took Paul's belt and bound his own feet and hands and said, "This is what the Holy Spirit says. In this way, the Jews at Jerusalem will bind the man who owns this belt, deliver him into the hands of the Gentiles." When we heard this, we, as well as the local residents, began begging him not to go to Jerusalem. Then Paul answered, "What are you doing, weeping and breaking my heart? For I am ready not only to be bound, but even to die at Jerusalem for the name of Jesus Christ." And since he would not be persuaded, we fell silent, remarking, "The will of the Lord be done." I don't want you to picture this. This is so powerful, so emotion. These people are real. It's not just stuff we read and just, you know, we got to see this and feel this. I mean, it's told him what would happen about being bound. But now Agabus comes up and physically takes his belt off and ties him all up. It's saying, "This is what's going to happen to you. The one who owns this belt, well, that's Paul. And I'm showing you exactly what's going to happen. And you're delivered to the Gentiles." That's not a good thing. These people are crying. They're weeping and they're begging him, "Don't go." Paul's got the money to help the brother. He has been traveling in this third journey, going all over the place. Roger read one passage this morning, 1 Corinthians 16. That's when he's collecting the money there. And when you read that, he says, "As I talked to all the churches of Galatia," he's been there. He's been, the church at Thessalonica begged them to be a part of it. And all this money is being collected. He's got to go there. And they're saying, "Don't go." And they're crying, but they realize he's got to go. And so it's silent. Can you picture that emotional scene? That's weeping and crying and begging, and Paul's literally tied up before him. And he says, "I got to go." That's having the courage, that physical courage. It's not impossible that such courage might be required of us today. So are we prepared to stand and defend it? I mean, I don't watch news much. I have Amy that fills me in on things. But I do know from this studying on the Islam and seeing the things that goes on in this country and seeing the lackadaisical way things are with people. As an old song, it kind of really dates me. On the eve of destruction. There's a day when this country has got to be able, and Christians have the courage, this for physical danger. We have to be prepared. It's not something that just happens to you and now you figure out what to do. You've got to be prepared. More often, though, the dangers are not physical. Peter, physically courageous, shows that it's possible a person have this immense physical courage and still lack moral courage. Jesus said, "You're going to deny me. I will never fall away," Peter says. And I believe he says it with all his heart. He says, "Lord, with you I'm ready to go both to prison and to death." And here, all these soldiers are coming. There's a bunches of them. And at the time that they'd be coming is a full moon. I don't know if it was cloudy, but there's going to be some light. And you could hear all the weaponry and all this coming. And Peter's got his dagger knife, and he's swinging it for all it's worth. There was definitely physical courage there. Peter was rebuked by God, and he ends up denying him three times, even after he said he would never do that. Let's go. We're familiar with this, but let's go back to Mark. Look at Mark's account of chapters 14. So here are all these soldiers, heavily armed. Peter stood up to them. Verse 66, as Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came. He's about to be brought down by a girl, by a servant girl. And seeing Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You were with Jesus the Nazarene." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you're talking about." He went onto the porch. The servant girl saw him and began once more to say to the bystanders, "Hey, this is one of them." But again he denied it. And after a little while, the bystanders were again saying to Peter, "Surely you're one of them, for you're a Galilean too." But he began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man you're talking about." One of the other accounts has Jesus looking at him. Immediately a rooster crowed a second time. And Peter remembered how Jesus made the remark to him, "Before a rooster crows twice, you will have denied me three times." And he began to weep. He was brought down by a young girl saying, "You were there." That's a huge lesson. And then years later, he showed us a similar lack of courage in the Gentile controversy. I'll not take the time to turn to Galatians 2, 11 to 14. But we know that it has to do with the eating the meat and the so many Jews were trying to keep part of that old law, and it was told that wasn't the case. And Peter was the one who was in on that at the beginning with Cornelius. But he stopped eating with the Jews. And Paul comes into town and calls him out face to face in front of everyone. And even Barnabas was being carried away into sin by this. See, Satan knows the kind of things that's going to get you. It's going to get me. And I really feel and I don't know because I've never been tested there. But I hope to feel in my heart that if I'm faced with a physical situation, that I have the faith and courage to stand up to it. But I know I failed sometimes with this moral courage. He knows the things we're most afraid of. Embarrassment. How many times have you not stood up or done what's right because you didn't want to be embarrassed? You didn't want to stick out like a sore thumb. Confrontations. I think if someone likes confrontations, there's a problem there. Looking for confrontations, there's a problem there. But many times we're afraid of confrontations because it's so uncomfortable and it just is heart-wrenching. But at times, that's what's needed. And who likes being made fun of? You know, I guess it's true of every generation coming up, but man, today's society, you young children growing up, the way that society has girls dressing And I sound like an old man. I am an old man. But some of this music, and that's always been an issue, but now it's just out there even more. Now there's no bar. I mean, anything and everything is set and accepted. And if you just want to do what's right, you're made fun of. You don't wear the tight leggings, you're made fun of. Those things aren't right. And that's all everybody wears, seems like. Not accepted and you're left out. Nobody likes that. Now some can handle some of these things and others cannot. And let me make this point clear. I used to think when I was in school that, boy, I can't wait till I get older so I don't have to deal with this so much. Well, it didn't go away. It came in different forms. It's still there. You have the loss of social esteem. How many stories do we hear about people being bullied on Facebook? Rejection, hostility. These things are there. And knowing our personal fears, Satan threatens us at those points. Knowing that we will do nearly anything he says to avoid these things. And basically, maybe anything is too strong. But all he's after is that word compromise. Maybe don't give in to all of this, but let's compromise. If we give in to such pressure and deny Christ, then we place ourselves among those who confess Christ only when little is at stake. It's really easy, as I said in class, to sit here in air conditioned in the summer, heat in the winter, padded pews, roof over our heads, plenty of room, and confess Christ. But Christ asks us to lead a life 24/7 in word and deed, which openly acknowledges him, regardless of what danger is faced. Let me read to you Luke 12:8-9. It says, I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before men, the Son of Man also will acknowledge before the angels of God. But the one who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. Boy, that's a passage that I know we know. But boy, we better think about that seriously. Not when we're assembled here three times a week, just then. Every single minute of the day. We're not to hide the truth about our identity any more than Jesus did. Oh, that clock. Go to John 18. Once again, going back to when Jesus is about to be arrested. And we pick up in verse 3. Judas then, having received the Roman cohort, which is, like I said, there was a lot of men coming. That's normally 600. And officers from the chief priests and Pharisees came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. That's what I'm telling you. They didn't sneak up on him. Jesus, knowing all the things that were coming up upon him, went forth and said to them, "Who do you seek?" He didn't go back and say, "You guys get in the front." The answer said, "Jesus, the Son of Nazarene." And he said, "I am he." And Judas also, who was betraying him, was standing with him. So when he said to him, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. That's amazing. Therefore, he asked them again, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus the Nazarene." Jesus said, "I told you I am he. So if you seek me, let these go their way." And that is to fulfill the word which he spoke, "Of those whom you have given me, I lost not one." And then we see how Peter gets his sword out. You know, I mentioned this before, but looking at the geography of the land, when you've got the Mount of Olives here, and then you look down, you see the temple, and so they would walk up and come up here to the Mount of Olives. All Jesus had to do was just go this way into the desert, and they'd have never found him. But he was there waiting, and he put himself right front and center. And when he said, "Who are you looking for?" "It's me." "Who are you looking for?" "It's me." That's what we're supposed to be. I believe, I don't know if it was lawyers, one other preacher was talking about how some people were working in a factory and they didn't even know that either one of them was a member of the church. How can that be? How can that be? We have to let people know who we are, not just to our neighbors, but also to our families and spouses and children, to our brethren, to ourselves. And when we don't do that, we show God that we are ashamed of him. "He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." This is some of the things we'll talk about tonight when we talk about when I must stand alone. But looking at this moral courage and what God will give us will help us do that. But to be ashamed of Christ is to be lost. When we put family, friends, anything in front of Christ, then what we are saying is that I'm ashamed of you, God. And Mark 8:38 says, "Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in his glory of his Father and with the holy angels." When we put family first, we put friends first, we're saying, "God, you know, I'm ashamed of you." Well, we just wrote our ticket to hell. Eternal damnation. The courage we can have is grounded in God's triumph over every evil. It's through Christ and only through him that we can do all things, Philippians 4:13. Do we believe that? And then John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." Does that mean you're never going to be troubled or afraid? No, but you get the courage to stand strong and courageous to keep fighting through it. And John 16:33, "I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulations, but take heart, I have overcome the world." But he's also told them that they will hate you because you're following me. There's no need for fear, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7. It's a victorious Savior whom we follow. Let's look at Revelation 19. I love this passage. I love the way it's laid out. We're about to read about the great battle of the Lord. Verse 11, beginning Revelation 19, "And I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it is called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he judges and wages war. His eyes are a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written on him, which no one knows except himself. He is clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies which are in heaven, clothed in fine linen, white and clean, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword, so that with it he may strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron." All kinds of Old Testament passages. "He treads the winepress as the fierce wrath of God the Almighty, and on his robe and on his thigh he has a name written, King of King and Lord of Lords. You see all this big setup for this showdown. This big showdown. And look at verse 19. And I saw the beast and the king of the earth and their armies assembled to make war against him who sat on the horse and his army. Okay, so we're set. You see that vivid picture painted by the Apostle John. And what happens? Verse 20. And the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet who performed signs in the presence by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped the image, and the two were thrown alive in the lake of fire which burns with brimstone. And the rest were killed with the sword which came from his mouth of him who sat on the horse, and all the birds were filled with their flesh. It's done. The big battle. We see what Christ and everything is there. And here's the enemy. It's all set up and boom, it's done. Victory. That's who we follow. As we wind the lesson down, it's the overcomer through Christ who enjoys heaven. Revelation 21, 1-7. Where he tells us of the great things that won't be there, and I mean great as in the horribleness that we know about, of the tears and all that, won't be there. But being cowardly can damn our very souls. Revelation 21, let's look at verse 8. Verse 7 says, he who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, he will be my son. But for the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the immoral person, the sorcerers, and idolaters, all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. We don't have to be a murderer. We don't have to be a rapist. We don't have to be a liar. Just cowardly. Just don't do nothing. God says, I will not fail you or forsake you. That promise is reaffirmed in Hebrews 13:5. He says, be strong and courageous. He says, be strong and very courageous. Says, the book of law shall not depart from your mouth. You meditate on it day and night, so be careful to do all that is written in it. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord is God, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Back to Joshua chapter 1. After he's told that, and I want to extend, I wanted to go just a little bit more here, because how many times have I, or maybe you, heard a lesson and then walked out the door thinking I'm going to make some changes and then they don't happen? And we're told to be strong and courageous, and oh, that's such a great message and encouragement. But I want you to notice what Joshua does. Pick up in verse 10 of Joshua 1. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you are to cross the Jordan to go possess the land which the Lord your God has given you. Right away, Joshua's into action. Get ready. Get everything ready, because within 3 days, we're going. God's with us, being strong and courageous. And if you recall, they've already fought on this side of the Jordan River, and 2.5 tribes are here and already settled. And now Joshua's going to talk to them. Men, you're going to battle. You're going to battle. And when the battle's all done over there, then you can come home. And so, here's what they say, verse 16. They answered Joshua, saying, "All that you have commanded us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses." And listen to what they say. "Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words and all that you command him shall be put to death." And listen what they tell Joshua. "Only be strong and courageous." He's heard it from God. Now he's hearing it from the men that he's going to be leading in battle. And they are saying, if we don't do everything you say, then we should be put to death. It doesn't take long for that to happen. Achan messes up in Ai, and he's stoned to death. The Bible teaches that courage is needed every day. It takes courage to walk down the aisle and sit on the front seat and request to be baptized. It takes courage to walk down the aisle and ask for prayers of the congregation. It takes courage to live each day faithfully. But God has given us everything we need to live our lives courageously today so that we can live in all eternity with him. Only be strong and very courageous today and every day. Let us stand and sing.
Hear thus we vote.